The Athletic.
In 2012, Rangers were dumped into the basement of Scottish football. If you've been following our story so far, you'll know that while they occasionally made heavy work of it, back-to-back promotions brought Ali McCoist's side just one final step from a return to the big time. But it was a step too far, and McCoist was gone by Christmas.
Rangers manager Ali McCoist has tendered his resignation.
In a tricky championship season, Rangers were beaten into third place by Hearts and Hibs, and they were denied entry to the Premiership in the playoffs by Motherwell.
It'll be a long summer for Rangers. Motherwell will be a top-flight club again come the new season.
For the first time since they were consigned to the third division, the Rangers Express had hit the buffers. It was time for a change. It was time for Mark Warburton.
Tremendous privilege and honour, a club of this history and tradition. You walk around the Grand Stadium for me first time this morning and you smell the history, so it really is an honour.
I'm your host, Ailey Barber. Welcome to Beyond the Headline, the fall and rise of Rangers.
Looking back on it retrospectively, I think he was a terrific appointment by the club.
His motto was always, well, plan B is to do plan A better.
The actual performance on that evening was utterly deplorable.
Part 3, the frustration.
He gets it. You know, you go to Ibrox, it's special. It's really special. David Weir always told me, and you live and breathe it. And as I say, I use the word privileged, not to sound like an old man, just because it is. You are privileged to manage such a great club.
This is Mark Warburton. Once a high-flying City trader, he gave it all up to try to make it as a football coach. And he succeeded. Having started as a youth coach with Watford, he moved to Brentford to work with the senior players before stepping into management himself in 2013. He very nearly took the Bees to the Premier League, but fell out with the ownership and left in 2015. It was then that a wounded Rangers that had barely got to the playoffs the previous season made their move. But they were not in great shape.
Dave King had released some like 13 players. I think we walked into 9 players on the first day. And we took a couple of from the youth team. I think Barry Mackay came over and immediately, impressed us. But it was just looking with Davy Weir, because he had been at the club during the great times. And I could see and hear from him his surprise and sadness, really. And also, I'm really thinking, the club of Glasgow Rangers size, here we are with 9 players on day one. And it was clearly a giant of a club that had certainly obviously lost its way, but it was on its way back. That was the key message, it was on its way back.
Looking back on it retrospectively, I think he was a terrific appointment by the club.
This is Finlay Marks, a journalist and Rangers supporter.
He brought in an entirely new team, both on and off the park. He used his connections down south to bring in some decent players for not much money, you know, well-established championship players like Martin Waghorn and a young lad from Wigan called James Tavernier, who, you know, pops up in this story.
He does pop up in this story, but not just yet.
I think it was also important having someone who was completely divorced from that bubble of Scottish football.
Adam Miller is someone you've probably seen on Twitter. He's better known as the man behind the Twitter account Old Firm Facts.
Who, you know, didn't have that burden of expectation, you know, being a club legend, whether it was McCoist or even Stuart McCall coming in as a caretaker manager. Warburton was completely outside that world.
An Englishman who had never played in Scotland and was very inexperienced as a manager. Sounds familiar, right?
So he came in with fresh ideas. And I think, you know, I think with Warburton, he got them playing a kind of more attacking football. I think there was a kind of confidence that was going through the side that maybe wasn't there before.
I think a club with the stature and expectation of Rangers, you've got to give the players a solution.
Mark Warburton.
You're privileged to play here in front of 50,000 fans. So how are we going to do it? You've got to give them a way out. We're not going to just turn up and hope. We're going to go out and play. This is how we're going to do it. And every day we might concede some goals, but we're going to be on the front foot, attacking with 6, defending with 4. And it was making sure that the boys had a clear message of how to go about the task. Because the task was clear, it's non-negotiable, you had to get promotion. And it's all very well saying you've got the bigger wages and better players, but you've got to do that at a club of Rangers after where they'd been as a club and what was to them. So, you know, the players deserve so much credit for the way they took on board messages and applied themselves.
This time, Rangers hit the ground running. Under Warburton's leadership, they won their first 11 games. They also won the Challenge Cup, the tournament for non-Premiership clubs.
Oh, he's going to be on Noble. Noble can't touch him.
Oh, no, Kenny! Kenny! Go on, Kenny! Kenny deserves it. If anyone deserves it, Kenny Miller deserves it. It's Rangers 4, Peterhead 0.
And most importantly, they beat Celtic 2, knocking them out of the Scottish Cup semi-final on penalties.
Rogic, he's missed! Derby day in Glasgow belongs to Rangers! They've beaten Celtic, and quite simply, there is no better feeling than that!
But they would lose the Scottish Cup final to Hibs.
They've only gone and done it! They've only gone and won the Scottish Cup! What kept you, Hibs? David Gray with the winner!
But we literally were running on empty, and the break killed us, and we didn't deal with that side of the break very, very well. But we wanted that major trophy desperately. I think it just came at the players were absolutely spent after so much, after getting the trophy, getting back to the Premier League and achieving the goal. It was almost like, we needed, you know, that was it. And the cup final was, it had been 2 weeks earlier, great, but the fact that it was where it was, losing the likes of Don Ball out of the cup final would have been so, you know, impressive in the semi-final, for example. Just all these small things added up.
Unfortunately, it kind of unravelled quite quickly.
That's Ross McAdam, lifelong Rangers fan.
You know, it didn't really sit right. You know, Rangers just don't lose cup finals to Hibs, so I think his time was kind of up, or he was up against it at that point anyway. And ultimately, I think that day, and when I say that day, I'm talking about the semi-final and beating Celtic, might actually have been a bit of a disaster long-term for the club. You know, it gave us, as fans and the club itself, probably a bit of a false impression about where we were in comparison to Celtic at that point. I think we thought we were a lot closer than we maybe were based on one result. And I think it also almost galvanised Celtic, who went out and appointed Brendan Rodgers, which, if we're being honest, was a bit of a game changer.
Nevertheless, promotion had been secured. Rangers were back.
The day has come. A moment 4 years in the waiting, and they've been 4 long years. From the bottom to the top, the journey is over. Rangers are back.
But being back in the top flight didn't necessarily mean that they were back to battling it out with Celtic for the title. However, not everyone saw it that way.
There will have been an arm of Rangers fans that thought they could go up and straight away win the league, which is odd, and it's hard for any team to get promoted. But what they did do was they were competitive, just not at the level that a lot of Rangers fans would have been used to.
Andrew Slaven, the host of the Totally Scottish Football Show, he thinks that Mark Warburton was up against it from the start.
I think he tried to lower expectation. He tried to be honest with Rangers fans and with the media, and you kind of, I don't think you can really do that when you're at Celtic or Rangers. You have to kind of be, you know, if things are going wrong, you have to be quite frank and upfront and say this is not good enough and things are going to change. You can't say, well, you know, a draw is a good point or anything like that. You can't have any negative language when you're a Celtic or Rangers manager. Otherwise, people are going to jump on it. And I think Warburton tried to temper expectation. He tried to manage the media.
I think there was just an assumption that, okay, Rangers are back in the top flight.
Adam Miller.
The next step is winning the league. And that was a realistic proposition. But you look back on some of the Rangers teams that were being fielded, and you contrast it with the, you know, the 11 that Steven Gerrard is regularly putting out, and Wilders, you know, while Tavernier might remain from that side, there's a huge, huge difference.
I think that a lot, or the general public opinion, was that Rangers were going to seamlessly step back up into the top flight in Scotland.
Emma Dodds, presenter at Rangers TV.
But that is a much bigger gulf. Coming from the Championship into the Premiership is one thing, but coming up and then challenging is a completely different thing.
So what was the reality of the situation? How does Mark Warburton remember the season objectives being lined out to him?
The directive was to maintain you know, consistency in the division, to keep on developing the squad. But third year, the following year, European football was non-negotiable. And that's fair enough. That would have been fair enough. The following year, what would that have been, 17, 18 or something? Yeah, that if you're thinking to yourself, you can't come in the top two or three, then Rangers, hopefully with the support and investment, we don't deserve to be in the job. But that first year back in the Premier League was just about solidifying the position. We were second when they got rid of us. So that was a bitter pill to swallow. But as I say, the non-negotiable came in the third year.
So stabilise the club, and next season, Europe. However, not everyone at the club got that memo, and a banner was unfurled at the start of the season, which said, going for 55.
When you put going for 55, and I saw that, I walked in the morning in the stadium and went, who on earth put that up there? But it came from the top.
And that's where his downfall began. But it wasn't just about miscommunications happening on the blue side of Glasgow. On the green side, Celtic had just appointed a new manager, one Brendan Rodgers. And in the 2016-17 season, they became both an immovable object and an unstoppable force.
I think potentially expectations were part of the problem with Warburton.
Finlay Marks.
I think given the budget that Rangers still had at that point, which was still drastically less than Celtic, it was probably still more than any other team in Scotland, but it was still woefully short of the amount of money and investment that Celtic had in being able to assemble a playing squad.
They had their best ever year in their 100 odd year history. And that's what happened. Now Brendan's come down, he's doing the same with Leicester City now, he's an outstanding coach. He came in, they had big money players, the Dembele's and Sinclair's, and they had, you know, way above the Rangers budget, way, way, multiples of the Rangers budget. And Brendan did a fantastic job in that first year, but we were second. And all they were worried about, unfortunately, was the gap to Celtic. But you know that when a striker, for example, always scores 15 goals and then suddenly scores 30, he'll go back. I use the term regress to the norm. Warburton says Celtic go backwards. I never. But the Celtic, you know, you look at it and that's what happened. The following year, they went back to their normal. Lost the same normal number of games, blew the same number of games as normal. It was that extraordinary year. And unfortunately, I think we paid the price for the gap between the two teams.
Celtic Park explodes in Flutterfetti. The Celtic support standing as one to celebrate the sixth in a row champions.
But back to Rangers and the season opener. The much-vaunted comeback game at home to Hamilton was, well, a bit of a damp squib. Rangers needed a Martin Waghorn equaliser to rescue a point in front of 49,000 unimpressed supporters. Warburton's side steadied the ship in the following weeks with back-to-back wins, but then came their first league meeting with Celtic. It didn't go well.
It was 2-1 at half-time. Dembele is a guy on, you know, multiples of any of our players. Dembele scores, he said, we are 2-1. Joe gets a goal to put at half-time. And then we did really well after the break. And if you remember, Barry Mackay just put the ball a fraction wide of the post to go tall. Had we gone tall there, that would have silenced Parkhead, etc., and we'd have been in a good position. They get the goal on a breakaway, 3-1. Now, straight away, what do you do at 3-1? Now, someone said to me afterwards, you should have just said, right, sat back, get a load of defenders on and take a 3-1 defeat. I've never met a manager yet who wants to do that. So we had Harry Forrester, if you recall, and we did Harry Forrester, and within 2 minutes of doing Harry Forrester, Rob Keenan pulls his hamstring and Philippe Senderos gets sent off. So you go to nine men. We've got Joey Barton, Tav and Lee Wallace as a back three with nine men against Celtic. Yeah. And it becomes 5-1. With nine men. Ah, it's disaster, disgrace, clueless amateurs. Who the fig knew that you're going to lose your two centre-halves to injury and a red card? What's Philippe doing? I've no idea. Experience guy lunging in like that. I've no idea. But again, his first Old Firm and dealing with the demands of that type of game. Poor decisions. So, you know, we've gone from 2-1 and just going to 2-all to being 3-1 down to nine men. And then, of course, you know, when you lose 5-1 in an Old Firm game, you get all the pelters in the world. But, you know, they didn't actually describe the game very well. As I said, there was no mention of Barry Mackay. It was just the fact that we got beat 5-1. And in Glasgow, in the Goldfish Bowl, you've got to take the pain with that one.
A 5-1 defeat at Celtic Park emphasised the gap between the Premiership stalwarts and the latest addition to the top tier. Without the resources to compete on a level playing field with Celtic, the pressure began to up on Warburton.
When I landed in Glasgow for the first time, a media guy said to me, there's always got to be a good cop and a bad cop in Glasgow. So I looked at him, and he's still a good friend now, and he said, Ronnie Dial is the bad cop right now. Whatever you do, you'll be the good cop. But then the moment Brendan arrived, he said to me, remember, good cop, bad cop, you've had your time in the sun. And he was right.
For the fans, though, the problem was on the pitch with tactics.
The issue Rangers fans had was, well, if plan A isn't working, we need a plan B. But his motto was always, well, plan B is to do plan A better.
I think the problem with Warburton sometimes was, when it didn't work so well, his plan B was just to do plan A better.
That was just nonsense.
Mark Warburton.
I heard many, many managers say similar things. I think I had top Arsenal guys say, you know, plan B, do plan A better. I've heard that before. All I was saying was we weren't, you know, if we change to a 2 and a 1 in midfield, if we narrow up the wide players and the fullbacks push on, you can tweak plan A. You haven't got to radically change your whole formation. We never had the players to go to a 3, for example, or whatever it may be. So, you know, they took it as a plan B. Yeah, do plan A better. Because at the moment, we're not cohesive. We're not moving the ball well enough. Mm. So I said it in a very, very sensible way. And of course, they jump all over it like a... And even now, it's all talking, you know, when you feel a bad result. You had no plan B. What?
In February 2017, after a run of poor results, Rangers announced that Warburton and his team had resigned. Here, though, is how Warburton remembers it.
We absolutely, you would never resign from a club like Rangers, ever. So if you don't resign, there's only one thing that's happened. It's as simple as that.
Warburton is now at Queen's Park Rangers, but he doesn't have any regrets about his time in Scotland.
It was a privilege to manage such a magnificent club. You know, it was on a journey, to use your term from the start of this chat. I knew we were on a journey back to where we wanted to get to the top of Scottish football. An absolute privilege. We got promotion. We won the Challenge Cup, we get to the Cup Final, and we take the club back to the Premier League. So if people are saying I didn't do a good job for Glasgow Rangers, not in an arrogant way, not in a big-headed way, but I think you've got to turn around and say the CV looks strong.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
After a brief spell in the hot seat for under-20s boss Graham Murty, Rangers made a surprising choice. On the 13th of March 2017, Rangers unveiled Portugal's Pedro Caixinha. He was poached from Algarafa in Qatar. His management CV listed jobs with Santos Laguna in Mexico and União de Leiria and Nacional in his home country. If you're feeling baffled, you're not the only one. Hayley McQueen, Sky Sports news presenter and former host of Scottish Football on Sky.
Just bringing somebody in who had never even managed in Great Britain to try and have him manage one of the biggest clubs in the world, one of the biggest clubs, certainly one of the two biggest clubs in Scotland, and have him understand the rivalry, understand the city, understand the passion, understand the history, and understand what the club had just been going through. I don't think he had an understanding of any of that. It was just, oh yeah, Rangers, big club. They battle it out with Celtic. I'll head in there. They've got a wonderful big stadium and I'll just bring a whole load of players, get rid of a load of players that I'm not all that keen on, and I'll just be given a bit of time to kind of rebuild here and wave a magic wand and hope that what I want to do will work. And obviously it didn't.
I went along to his first press conference when he was unveiled as the new Rangers manager. And to be honest, and I will be honest myself, what he was saying sounded plausible. You looked at a guy who, in terms of his, you know, career-wise, he seemed to have been, you know, in and around big clubs. He seemed to, well, he talked a good game, put it that way.
This is Stuart Weir. He was head of sports at the Glasgow Herald at this time.
And I just think the guy was, he was out of his depth. I think after a period of time, I think that he almost became a laughingstock of not just amongst Celtic fans, but actually amongst Rangers fans, where it was like, regardless of how bad we have been previously, how bad is it now? Because this guy's just a joke of a manager, a joke of a coach.
By the time Rangers appointed Pedro, Celtic were just a month away from winning the Premiership. They'd already won the Scottish League Cup and were well on their way to winning the Scottish Cup. In fact, this season from Celtic was so sensational that they went unbeaten in the league and inflicted the heaviest defeat on Rangers at Ibrox since 1897, producing another 5-1 win. All in all, it was a season to forget. And so that's what the management staff did. Drew a line through it, gave Pedro another shot, and gave him a rather large amount of money. Some of it was spent brilliantly.
Pedro Caixinha brought through Alfredo Morelos. I think a lot of people forget that.
Morelos has grown to be absolutely adored by the support. And I think the key thing for me here is he's given, you know, younger fans a real idol that they can admire and look up to for the first time.
Caixinha also brought in another player who would turn out to be a stalwart of the current side, Ross McAdam.
But he did also sign Ryan Jack from Aberdeen on a pre-contract free transfer, and he's been a mainstay and Stephen Gerrard's Rangers, and Stephen Gerrard speaks fairly regularly about how much he loves Ryan Jack and how an integral part of the squad he is. Two of the mainstay of this title winning side, two big personalities and players in this squad, both came from him, so we can maybe give him a wee thanks for that.
But for all Scottish football fans, Pedro Caixinha is known for one thing, and one thing only: the moment it all crumbled down for him. The 2017-18 domestic season was yet to get underway, but Rangers still needed to get through the European qualifier against a small team from Luxembourg.
Let's say his demise was somewhat accelerated when Rangers lost to Progress Niederkorn in the Europa League, Luxembourg's finest. Rangers, they won the first game 1-0 at Ibrox and then lost the second leg 2-0 away from home. And shock results happen in football, but the actual performance on that evening was utterly deplorable.
It is Sebastian Thiel with the free kick, and it's gone in. It flashes past Fotheringham. It might have gone all the way from Sebastian Thiel, and Rangers are staring at a shock European exit.
Adam Miller.
That alone, regardless of what had gone before in the past few years for Rangers, would have been considered one of the lowest points in modern times for Rangers, to be losing against a team of that calibre. So they get put out 2-1 on aggregate. They'd won the first leg and then they lost 2-0 in Luxembourg. After the game, there was a photo that emerged of Caixinha standing in a hedge outside the ground, pointing his finger, I think, at a fan, and they were obviously having a disagreement. And you just thought, if there was one image, and there's plenty of competition for it, but if there was one image that summed up the state Rangers had got themselves into over the last few years, it's that one. And it instantly became a meme, and that's, I think, sort of 3.5 years ago, and you'll still regularly see it.
Inevitably, Pedro Caixinha was sacked in October 2017 after just 7 months in charge, with Rangers fourth in the table. Graham Murty, who was caretaker manager for 6 games after the exit of Mark Warburton, took the reins once again. And then when Aberdeen boss Derek McInnes turned down a move to Ibrox, Murty was given the job until the end of the season, though he didn't quite make it. He was relieved of his duties in May after a 5-0 defeat to, yes, you've guessed it, Celtic.
He's a very, very good coach, and he's really, really highly thought of at Rangers. That's why they brought him back.
Andrew Slaven.
I mean, he was really asked to do a difficult job twice. And it's funny because I think a lot of Rangers fans genuinely wanted him to do well. They liked the idea that he'd been at the club for a short while and managed a lot of the young players in the academy. And he was a nice story. But it's sometimes there's a certain calibre of manager, a certain aura around someone. And he never really had that.
Graham Murty may not have had an aura about him, but his replacement certainly did. Negotiations were protracted. The candidate was so well regarded that when it came to choosing a place to start his managerial career, he was not short of options. Indeed, the negotiation process was as much a case of Rangers impressing him as it was him impressing Rangers. But on May the 4th, 2018, the Ibrox club got their man. Steven Gerrard was on his way to Scotland.
He was the most talked about player. Everyone knew his name. Everyone knew all about him.
I think it was definitely Celtic for 10 in a row.
You know, I've seen a lot of good Rangers teams over the last 20 years. And this one's up there with the best of them.
This is part 3 of 4 of Beyond the Headline, The Fall and Rise of Rangers. All 4 parts are available to listen to now and ad-free via the Athletic app. If you're not already a subscriber, then go to theathletic.com/beyond to claim your sign-up offer. The Fall and Rise of Rangers was produced by Abby Patterson. The episodes were written by Ian McIntosh and Nick Miller. The executive producer was Ian McIntosh.